Hi, everybody. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
Freedom. This is what I call freedom.
Hi, everybody. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air.
Freedom. This is what I call freedom.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, here we go, here we go. Okay, that's enough. All right. Thanks for tuning into the George Wilder Jr. Show. We are live. This is not a recording or a download. And but a lot of those previous shows that I recorded, they're just as, you know, fresh as they as if they were live. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's a beautiful day in the city of Chicago. And I'm hearing that it's totally hot towards the west. and like Phoenix and El Paso, Texas. I think Phoenix, they're saying, is about 120 degrees. Wow. I think Las Vegas, up and around California, it is totally, totally hot. Las Vegas, Los Angeles, it is hot. So you people over there, you guys over there, you fans over there, you guys do the right thing and stay safe, okay? This is coming from the George Wilder Jr. But it's beautiful here. I mean, it's about in the 80s here, and the sun is shining. It looks like a great summer day. And tomorrow is the officially start of summer, but it has been feeling like summer since the beginning of June, okay? Since the last week or two of May, it's been feeling like summer. But I'm not complaining, but once it gets 120 degrees like it is, reportedly is in Phoenix, Arizona. I mean, places around that area, it's got to be unsettling, you know. So stay safe over there, and you will always be in our thoughts on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Okay, Ivan Edmonds is back. He's going to talk about The Big Hype. I'm thinking that's a book. And also commentary on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Commentary is just stuff that I, you know, read and hear and report from news, bit pieces of news and stuff like that. All right. welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Always making the world a better place. At least we're always trying to make the world a better place. But, you know, we're going to need a lot more than just the George Wilder Jr. Show, even though there are a lot of television shows and talk shows out here are about the same thing. You know, I hear a lot of people saying make the world a better place and make the world a better. I say, oh, wow, they've been listening to my show, right? Hopefully. You know, I don't mind people borrowing tidbits of what I say and do and produce on the show. I really don't. I mean, because, you know, it just proves that people are listening. People are paying attention. People are thinking that there's something special about this show that they can use, and that's, I'm not being a braggart on that or anything, but you know, because a lot of the things that I say on the show, some of the things are not my own. I borrow them from people, maybe from other talk show hosts or anything like that, like Be Kind to One Another. I borrowed that from a television talk show host. I'm not going to mention her name, but I just liked it. A lot of things I'll hear from other places, and if I like it, I'll borrow it and say it on the show, or I write it into the monologue or into the marquee. Like, Be Kind to One Another out there. It is so easy. It is so easy is what is mine. That belongs to me. But Be Kind to One Another, that can belong to anybody anywhere. So. And it's not just something that I'm just writing. It's not something I'm just putting out there. It's something I'm saying from my heart. Be nice to one another out there. You know, life is too short to be angry, to be upset, to be pissed off, to be an asshole. You have to be nice to one another. You know, I mean, it's less stressful for one thing. You know, it is less stressful. Believe me, I know all about stress, you know, and you don't want it, because stress, as you probably know, can lead to more complications. It can lead to cancers, diabetes. It can lead to stroke. So you don't want to do that. I mean, you want to be less stressful as possible by at least being nice to people. I mean, you got some people out here who are totally ridiculous. And the best thing you can do with those kind of people is walk away. You know, don't get into any kind of confrontation or anything. And, you know, just walk away. And you just dismiss those people. You got to throw those people overboard. You don't want to, but you can't let yourself be tricked or punked into getting into some sort of a useless confrontation with somebody who has an attitude, you know. So it's better to... try to be nice. And if the other person doesn't want to be nice to you, then like I've just said, just walk away and, you know, and shake the sand off your foot and just keep walking, but still be nice to those who you meet. And it's contagious. You know, if you're being nice to someone, that individual is going to be nice to you right back. There you go. You got you made a new friend. You made, it is so nice. Sometimes you can be nice to nasty people. Nasty people, you know, I'd be so surprised that you're so nice to them. You're so understanding. You're so patient with them. Even nice, nasty people will start being nice because they see that you're nice and they're thinking, why am I such a nasty person? When this person over here is so nice to me and treating me with respect. I can't say that for all people, but it's possible that you can even turn around a nasty, grouchy, attitudish individual just by being nice. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It is 6:11 p.m. straight up Chicago time, and it is a beautiful day, folks. It is beautiful. I'm in my studio. I'm near the lake. I'm on the north side of the city of Chicago, which is a beautiful city. I know a lot of you people out there hear a lot of rotten things about Chicago. Oh, somebody else done got killed. Somebody done got shot. You know, you're probably right. But still and all, don't let that scare you away from the city. It's a beautiful city. It's a wonderful city. I'm proud to be here, and I don't think I'm going to ever leave, no matter what, because if there's something wrong going on in my city, I'm going to stay here and we're going to fight to make it right. And that's all I'm about, is trying to make things right. I'm neither a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm somewhere in the middle. But basically, I'm on the side of right, and I'm not on the side of wrong. And it's a great feeling that way, you know. So don't try to corner me and say, well, he's a bleeding heart liberal. No, I'm not. Oh, he's a progressive. No, I'm an independent. But that doesn't make me a Bernie Sanders fan. I used to be, but the guy is getting a little bit ridiculous right now. Hopefully he'll come back down to earth, right? So be nice to one another out there. It is so easy, you know, and you never know. You may, by your niceness, probably could change the mind of a lot of people, you know, because there's so many people out there just angry and just pissed off for no reason at all. And we are living in some dark times. I think I'm repeating myself, but that's okay. We are living in some dark times, but you know, I mean, it's up to us to change. If you don't like something, it's up to you to change, to make that change. I always bring up Michael Jackson's, the late Michael Jackson, Man in the Mirror. If you want to make a change, the first thing you do is look at yourself and then you make that change. But we want to make a change in the country. If the country is not going the way you want it to go, then you're the one who has to make that change. When I say fight battles, I don't mean being, you know, rioting or violence or anything like that. We fight. I said this yesterday on the show. We fight with our votes. We fight with nonviolence. That's the way we fight. And come November 18th, we will make our anger shown at the ballot box. You know, I mean, there's so many people going out picking up guns. Ah, I'm going to shoot him because he's taking away health care. You don't do that. This show is not about violence. This show is not about hate. This show is not about, you know, hurting other people. It's not about that. On the marquee, it says, hate has no home here. And I mean, I borrowed that, but because anyway, that's the way I felt. I mean, that's the way I felt. Hate has no home here. And I tell people before they come on the show, I let them know in an email or something or a call or something that, hate has no home here. And most people are level-headed, straight-headed. They know what I'm talking about because they've seen the sign. They've seen that slogan in other places. This show is all about uplifting, motivating, Whether there's a guest on the show, whether there's no guest on the show, this show will always be about making the world a better place, one show at a time. A heart at peace gives life to the body, but envy rots the bones. That's something to think about, huh? Be kind to one another out there. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. It is 6:16 straight up Chicago time. Sean Spicer says, press secretary. I mean, there's been all kind of news coming out of the White House press. Sean Spicer, who is the press secretary, that every now and then you're hearing that he's quitting, he's been fired, he's not going to show up. Then all of a sudden he does, and I don't know. It says here, Sean Spicer says nothing useful in the first on-camera briefing in over a week. What do you expect him to say? None of these Republicans who get in front of a camera say anything useful. These folks don't even know how to answer a direct yes or no question. And I want to say this again. This healthcare bill that's being secretly ran through that they're now calling Trump Care, half of those Republicans who are voting for it, or all of them, they have not even read the damn thing. They're voting for something, or they have voted for this thing without even reading it. And they're telling us, and they're telling the American people, that it's good for us. How do you know it's good for us when you haven't read it? These are Republicans. These are people with college and university educations. And that's crazy, not reading something that you're voting on. That's just like you or me signing a contract. Signing all these contracts and documents laid in front of us without reading it. That's the first thing you learn in grammar school. You know, if you're going to sign something, make sure you read it, because you could be signing your life away. You don't want to do that. Wow, Orrin Hatch. I mean, you hear Republicans come to the camera, well, I haven't read it, but I'm going to vote for it because I think it's good for America. How in the hell you... These are people who are representing the United States. This is crazy. Their constituency, the people of the United States. I actually think Donald Trump is representing only partial of the people of the United States, probably the rich people, the 1%, right? But to pass a bill, or try to pass a bill, or wanting to push a bill through without it even being read is nutty. I've heard this before. I've heard this several times, where the Republicans, or just politicians in general, even Democrats, have voted on bills that they haven't even read. Can you do that? It's like signing away your life. It's like first thing you learn in school anywhere. Never sign anything unless you read it first. But what about these clowns in Washington, D.C., who are supposed to be role models to the rest of us, you know, and they're not signing anything. They're not reading anything before they sign it. And they admitted that I didn't read it, but I signed it because it's good for America. If you didn't sign it, I mean, if you signed it and you didn't read it, how the hell do you know it's good for America? Because I'm a politician? Yeah, right. Okay. Well, anyway, it says Sean Spicer. Okay, they're saying that Sean Spicer says nothing. He did his first on-camera briefing without being in the press room. And they're saying he didn't say anything. I mean, we had Jeff Sessions a couple of weeks ago. I mean, he sat there for 2 hours and didn't say anything. Didn't say a damn thing. Moved his mouth, but nothing pertinent came out. What do you expect from a Republican? And another thing a lot of these guys, Republicans and Democrats, do, but mostly Republicans, they don't answer a direct question. And that's one of the reasons why I stopped watching these Sunday shows. I gave up a long time ago because these people did not answer a direct question. They talk all around the question. They talk over the question. They'll say, no, that's not what they will tell the moderator. Well, that's not the point. This is the point. They can't seem to answer a yes or no question. And that really pisses me off. And I just stopped watching these shows. And every Sunday I was watching because I wanted to know what the hell was going on in my country, what these people were doing. And it was just tragic. A lot of these people get on these talk shows and supposed to be doing interviews, and the interviewer can't even get a straight question out of these, a straight answer out of these folks. Not even a straight answer. And a lot of these guys who, girls, do these interviews, they get upset when the moderator asks them a question about something that they should know, especially when they're on TV and millions of people are watching them. They get on and just flat lie, you know, and then say we should believe it because they are on television and we are not. It's ridiculous. And another gripe I've had with some of these Sunday shows, I always felt that these Sunday shows should not be geared toward politicians in Washington. That was my gripe. Every Sunday you have politicians on the shows, and then you, after the politicians are, after they get through lying, then you have people sitting around conference table and they are giving their analysis on what was just said. My point here is a lot of these Sunday shows should be just strike out the politicians because these guys lie and they don't answer simple questions that are asked. It should be grassroots, everyday people on these shows. No politicians, not John McCain. I think he'd have been on Meet the Press and the Sunday shows and about 200 times. You can almost say change Meet the Press to John McCain show because he's Senator John McCain, because he's been on for so many times saying nothing, saying absolutely nothing, saying what he wants to say, you know, maybe to his base or something. But, you know, but anyway. I always felt that these Sunday shows should be geared toward ordinary people. The hell with the politicians. They should have ordinary people, working people coming on that show, sitting down, talking about what they feel, what we feel about the government, what we think the government should be doing. Ask us the questions. Ask me the questions. And listen to me tell you the answer to those questions that you asked me. You know, I always felt that the show should be geared toward ordinary, everyday people, working people, students. You know, why have these politicians on these shows who are going to lie, who are going to manipulate, who are not going to answer a straight direct yes or no question, all around the question, talk all above, below the question, never answering it directly, and they think that they've said something, and they think that we're stupid and that we can't recognize that they've just pivoted and not answered the question and saying what they want to say. That to me is like taking control of the moderator's show. If you don't answer the question, you shouldn't be on television. That should be one of the criteria of going on some of these shows. Answer a direct question or your ass will not be on. That's the way I feel about it. And I'll say this again. I think a lot of these shows that come on Sunday that have these politicians, I think they should ask these politicians and put ordinary American people on these shows every Sunday to gripe about their politicians, to gripe about policy, to gripe about issues that are not being covered like they should be, to gripe about politicians who are not representing their constituency to the fullest, who gripe about politicians adhering to their party and not to their voters, gripe about all of that and what they want, because we are the voters and we have the right to take their health care away from them like they're trying to take health care away from the rest of us. That's what I think. That is my gripe. And that is something that I believe. The Sunday show should not be geared toward all of these politicians coming on every Sunday, all day Sunday, all the Sunday shows, all the cable shows, all the network shows, broadcasting shows, and lawyers and all of this stuff to politicians. I think ordinary people should be coming on these shows. I've always felt that for a long time. A lot of people are going to disagree with me about that. I don't know the parameters, but I do know that the ratings probably will go through the roof. I mean, who wants to sit there and watch a lying politician not answer a question? Not me. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We will be right back. Stay with me.
Donald Trump is a con man. That is basically the easiest way to describe Donald Trump, the human being. And a lot of people knew this. We knew as soon as he announced his run for president, every horrible con he'd pulled off on the American public in the past. Trump University, Trump Stakes, how he screwed over all his workers. The man did everything possible to make a few extra dollars at the expense of everyone else, regardless of the fact that he was delivering shoddy products and lies. So we knew that. A lot of the American public knew it. A lot of Trump supporters understood that fact. But they still voted for him. And the question is, why did so many Americans fall for this Donald Trump con? Think about this. I know we've talked about the racism and the sexism, and yes, that played a huge role. Hillary Clinton's lack of talking about the issues played a role in people going to Trump.
All right, you're on the George Waddle Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hey, how you doing, George? This is Ivan Edmonds.
Hey, hi, Ivan. Welcome back to the show, man. Glad you could make it. We had so much fun last time.
Yes, we did. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Doing well. It's a beautiful day out here and all is well.
Yeah, it's beautiful here too, man. I mean, it is totally beautiful. It is so awesome. You know, I could just wrap it up and bring it inside with me, which is what I'm doing. You know, it's beautiful. Okay, so what is the big hype?
Big hype is the marketing group, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's the marketing group that I'm affiliated with. And it's just an awesome organization, you know, first class, a lot of excellence in their work. And mm-hmm. it's been a tremendous help to me. So that's big hype.
Oh, wow. Okay. Specifically, what do they do?
They basically handle a variety of marketing and publicity needs. So depends on, the type of publicity or marketing that you're interested in doing, and then they can help you create the right platform for you.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's great. That's wonderful. So if you want to just, you know, if you have a business and you want to get more people to hear about your business or to know about it, then some of us would probably check out the Big Hype.
Absolutely. Or maybe mm-hmm. if you had a book that you were trying to promote.
Okay.
Then you could same thing. Yeah, absolutely. Those are the type of things that they do, but a wide variety of publicity and advertising.
Yeah.
Really good organization.
Yeah. So I like the name, the Big Hype. I mean, it's an eye catcher. So it's an eye catcher, the Big Hype. And so basically you're saying that anything you want to get out there to the world, you can kind of hype it by going to this organization, hype it and get known. Something to that effect.
Absolutely. Or at least take what you're doing or maybe your thoughts or your ideas to the next level.
Great.
Their insight. Yeah.
Okay, let's say if I wanted to, you know, promote one of my books, and all I got to do is contact you guys and you would give me all the information and the background on that. And if I wanted to hype a book, or say if I wanted to sell a car or buy a car or advertise cars for sale or something like that. So you're like an advertising company.
Absolutely. Right. That's what Big Hype does.
Okay.
Advertising okay. publicity as well, you know, because they'll publicize or help you with the vision that you have. Maybe you have some ideas of a campaign you'd like to proceed, you know, on, like, if you mm-hmm. were trying to, say, promote a book or something of that, you know, then, of course, you might have some ideas in your mind that you already want to be presented. And professionalism, they can help you bring those ideas to reality, but also maybe even enhance and give you some thoughts and ideas that you hadn't actually had beforehand.
What are some of the reactions people are getting from being a part or utilizing the Big Hype?
Well, for me myself, it's been great. Mm-hmm. It really has been an eye opener for me, but then an eye catcher for others. You know, they've been just excellent as the way that they put together a presentation, the way they present you as a client, is top notch. Excellent.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's, okay. That's really what you look for. Well, that's what you want. You know, if you don't, even if you don't know to look for it, that is what you want. You know, you want excellence, and you want what you're doing to stand out. You want it to be seen. You want it to be heard among whatever else is out there, and you want your thing, whatever that is, whatever it is you're trying to publicize. You want it to be viewed as something of excellence. They're very good at that.
Yeah. Okay. How do you go about, finding clients, or do clients come after you? Do you go after them, or it's a little bit of both?
Well, you know what? I don't have all the insights and all the answers, but I will say.
Yeah, that's cool.
I believe it's both, because you're going to definitely have people that are going to seek you out that are looking to expand what they're doing. But at the same time, this is the nature of the business, too. So you're going to be publicized and market yourself as well.
Okay, great. So, Ivan, how have you been doing? Have you been, since the last time we talked, have things gotten better? Have things been looking up?
Always. Things are always looking up. And since the last time we talked, you know what? I've spent a lot of time thinking about some of the things we discussed. You kept bringing up to me, you kept mentioning books and talking about books and writing books, which really stuck with me and gave me some things to contemplate. And I'm actually at a point where I've been really trying to, you know, maybe jot down ideas here and there or thoughts here and there to, you know, maybe at some point compile and put together. I've never written a book in that type of sense, but after talking with you,
Ivan, you're we can barely hear you. You're going in and out.
Okay. How about now? Is that better?
There you go. That's great.
Okay, yeah. But yeah, since I talked with you last, I became more open to the idea.
Okay. Great, man. Write that book. I mean, it's a part of you, it's a part of what you're doing, it's a part of yourself, and you have so much knowledge. I mean, I would probably say do not just jot it down, but just get yourself go to a laptop or something, a computer, and start writing this stuff down, you know, and you can save it. And Microsoft Word or any kind of word processing software you can use, and just start, you know, just start writing it down, you know, because if you don't write it down, you're going to forget, you know. So, you know, I mean, hey, wow, you got plenty of time. I mean, it'll be another extension of yourself. So.
Yeah, I'm thinking of it that way, and it's kind of taking my time with it.
Take your time. Don't rush.
Yeah, don't rush. There's a lot involved in writing a book. There's a lot of thoughts you have to process.
You know what? It's fun. It's fun. I see writing as fun. I don't see it as a chore. I don't see it as a lot of work. I see it as fun. You gotta have fun, and you gotta be positive. You gotta have fun, and you gotta have maybe support. You know, somebody there that's edging you on to do it, you know, because they know that you have the talent to do it. And there's so many people out there waiting on that book. They're waiting for that book, and they're out there, and they are people who will buy. And you'd be surprised. And then the next thing you want to do another book, you know, and people are waiting for that. I mean, family, friends, you know. Strangers, nieces, nephews, whatever. People are waiting for it, and they will support you. But, you know, I always tell people when if they want to write, just write, you know, just write. That's it. And just, it doesn't have to be 300 pages, 200 pages. It could be less than 100 pages. It could be less than 50 pages. You know, you don't have to think about it as being a big, thick novel. No, I would never tell you to do that, say that. No, but it could be 50 pages. I mean, you know, I've got stuff on Amazon that's 28 pages, you know, so, and people are downloading it. So, yeah, it doesn't have to be it could be a pamphlet or something. It could be something. I know an author, I'm not going to say her name, but she's got what she calls 100 books and no more than 7 pages up on Amazon. So,
wow,
you know, yeah, 7 pages and people are downloading it. I downloaded some of her stuff and 6 or 7 pages. I said, what? I contacted her. I said, this is not a book. But anyway, she's, you know, but you know, it's up to you. Go right ahead.
You have to have so much content. I never thought of it.
No.
In the sense of
No, it doesn't have to have a lot of content. I mean, you got great writers out here, everyday writers, John Grisham, Stephen King. They do short stories. They write short stuff, less than 50 pages, less than 40 pages. You know, so you can, and people will still download it and people will still buy it. No, you don't have to put a lot of content in it unless you want to, unless you have all that information. But if you don't, you can just size it down. It's not about 300. I don't even have a book for 300 pages. You know, that's a lot of work. That's a lot of brain power. But,
I'm going to keep that in mind then. Maybe that's a different perspective I have to go at.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's up to you to how much you want to write. But I would probably say at least do over 1,000 words. 1,000 words is, I think 1,000 words is 2 pages. A novelette can be anywhere from 7,000 words to 400,000 words. You can do about 25 pages. Put it that way. 25 pages is what you probably would think about doing. But once you upload those 25 pages of that book to Amazon, it's going to register into a lot more pages, like 50 or 60 pages. Once it's edited and knocked down a little bit, it'll be a lot more. So it'll be a little bit more thicker. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope I motivated you.
You have motivated me actually. And, I got a second fire. I'm ready to run off and run with it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and once you start writing, if you should start, I mean, I'm not saying for you to do it. I'm just giving a suggestion, but if you should do it, make it fun, you know, sit down at the laptop or whatever and just smile and grin through it and just, you know, have fun with it, you know, and anything that pops up in your head that you do or your experiences, just jot it right down and have fun with it. And you'd be surprised. And those 25 or 30 pages will be done just like that because you're having fun with it. You know, it's making you laugh. It's making you smile. It's making you, you're feeling good, you know. And don't think of it as work. Think of it as just, you know, fun. That's what I think of it. So I don't, you know.
I'm going to try that.
Okay.
Continue working.
Okay.
Yeah. I appreciate all your input and your encouragement. I appreciate it.
Well, that's what this show is all about, man, making the world a better place. I mean, I wouldn't be here if I didn't try to encourage and motivate people. And that's the kind of people I try to have on the show, who encourages and motivate other people to discover their inner talents. And because, you know, I always felt that everybody, you know, has an inner talent everybody can do something, but some people fail to do it. You know, you never know. You never know until you try it. You know, you try it, and
right. Well, maybe people mm-hmm. don't exactly know what their talent is. Maybe they haven't really tapped into it.
That's true. That's true. Maybe they haven't tapped into it, but you know what? It's there. It's always there. And just because you have the talent to do one thing, you know, that's one of the things about talent. When you have talent, it means that you have talent to do more than just one thing. You can do several things. Don't you believe that?
Yeah, I do believe that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, me too. I believe that. And is there anything you would like to say to my audience before we go?
Just want to say thank you to your audience
okay.
for having me there. And just want to thank you again for the opportunity to sit and talk with you again and to be encouraged by you. You're always you are a great encouragement, and I appreciate that. I really do. Just want to say thank you.
No problem. No problem. It's all good. And it makes me feel good to know that there's people out there. I don't think you needed that much encouragement because you did say you were jotting stuff down. So I don't think you. OK, if people wanted to know more about the Big Hype, where would they go?
What they want to do is check into Big Hype Marketing in Costa Mesa, California.
Mm-hmm. Do they have a website?
Yes, and I want to say bighypemarketing.com, I believe. I could be wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So how long have you been with them?
I have been there now with them maybe about 8 months or so, somewhere around there.
Okay.
Not a lot.
So you still,
yeah.
So you're still kind of learning. Good. Learning. Yeah. Okay. Great. 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 You're a great spokesman. You are a pretty good spokesman for them.
Well,
all right. Eisman. No problem. No problem. Eisman Esmond on the George Wilder Jr. Show, man. You've always great. You've always been appreciative. And you always have a spot on the show if you want to come back or whatever you want to do. And thanks for coming. And you make sure you write that book.
I will. You're going to be the first person I call when I do.
Thank you so much. Take care.
All right. You too.
Bye-bye. Ivan Edmonds on the George Wilder Jr. Show, and we will do this if we can.
Split. Why Mary Kay Letourneau's former student is leaving her 21 years after the illicit affair that stunned the country. Plus, former first daughter Chelsea Clinton is live to share how mom's handling life after losing, her advice for new first daughter Ivanka Trump, and celebrating women.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away. But we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently.
Ah. Ashley Judd, stupid fucking slut. You can't sue someone for calling them a cunt. If you can't handle the internet, fuck off, whore. I wish Ashley Judd would die a horrible death. She is the absolute worst. Ashley Judd, you're the reason women shouldn't vote. Twisted is such a bad movie, I don't even want to rape it. Whatever you do, don't tell Ashley Judd. She'll die alone with a dried out vagina. If I had to fuck an older woman, oh my God, I would fuck the shit out of Ashley Judd. That bitch is hot AF. The unforgivable shit I would do to her. Online misogyny is a global gender rights tragedy, and it is imperative that it ends. Girls' and women's voices and our allies' voices are constrained in ways that are personally, economically, professionally, and politically damaged. And when we curb abuse, we will expand freedom. I am a Kentucky basketball fan, so on a fine March day last year, I was doing one of the things I do best. I was cheering for my Wildcats. The daffodils were blooming, but the referees were not blowing the whistle when I was telling them to. Funny, they're very friendly to me before the opening tip, but they really ignore me during the game. Three of my players were bleeding, so I did the next best thing. I tweeted. It is routine for me to be treated in the ways I've already described to you. It happens to me every single day on social media platforms such as Twitter and Facebook. Since I joined Twitter in 2011, misogyny and misogynists have amply demonstrated they will dog my every step. My spirituality, my faith, being a hillbilly, I can say that, you can't, all of it is fair game. And I have responded to this with various strategies. I've tried engaging people. This one guy was sending me hyper-sexual, nasty stuff, and there was a girl in his avatar, and I wrote him back and said, "Is that your daughter? I feel a lot of fear that you may think about and talk to women this way." And he surprised me by saying, "You know what? You're right. I apologize." Sometimes people want to be held accountable. This one guy was musing to I don't know who, that maybe I was the definition of a cunt. I was married to a Scot for 14 years, so I said, cunt means many different things in different countries. But I'm pretty sure you epitomize the global standard of a dick. I've tried to rise above it. I've tried to get in the trenches, but mostly I would scroll through these social media platforms with one eye partially closed, trying not to see it, but you can't make a cucumber out of a pickle. What is seen goes in. It's traumatic. And I was always secretly hoping in some part of me that what was being said to me and about me wasn't true. Because even I, an avowed, self-declared feminist who worships at the altar of Gloria, internalized the patriarchy. This is really critical. Patriarchy is not boys and men. It is a system in which we all participate, including me. On that particular day, for some reason, that particular tweet after the basketball game triggered something called a cyber mob, this vitriolic, global outpouring of the most heinous hate speech, death threats, rape threats. And don't you know, when I was sitting at home alone in my nightgown, I got a phone call, and it was my beloved former husband, and he said on a voicemail, "Loved one, what is happening to you is not okay." And there was something about him taking a stand for me that night that allowed me to take a stand for myself, and I started to write. I started to write about sharing the fact that I'm a survivor of all forms of sexual abuse, including three rapes, and the hate speech I get in response to that. These are just some of the comments posted to news outlets. Being told I'm a snitch is really fun. Thank you, Jesus. May your grace and mercy shine. So I wrote this feminist op-ed. It is entitled, Forget Your Teen. It is your online gender violence toward girls and women that can kiss my righteous ass. And I did that alone, and I published it alone because my chief advisor said, please don't. The rain of retaliatory garbage that is inevitable, I fear for you. But I trust girls, and I trust women, and I trust our allies. It was published. It went viral. It proves that every single day, online misogyny is a phenomenon endured by us all over the world. And when it is intersectional, it is worse. Sexual orientation, gender identity, race, ethnicity, religion, you name it, it amplifies the violence endured by girls and women, and for our younger girls, it is worse. It's clearly traumatizing. Our mental health, our emotional well-being are so gravely affected because the threat of violence is experienced neurobiologically as violence. The cortisol shoots up, the limbic system gets fired, we lose productivity at work. And let's talk about work. Our ability to work is constrained. Online searches of women applying for jobs reveal nude pictures of them, false allegations they have STDs, their addresses indicating that they are available for sex, with real examples of people showing up at this house for said sex. Our ability to go to school is impaired. 96% of all postings of sexual images in our young people, girls, our boys, are 2 to 3 times more likely non-consensually to share images. And I want to say a word about revenge porn. Part of what came out of this tweet was my getting connected with allies and other activists who are fighting for a safe and free internet. We started something called the Speech Project, Curbing Abuse, Expanding Freedom. And that website provides a critical forum because there is no global legal thing to help us figure this out. But we do provide on that website a standardized list of definitions because it's hard to attack a behavior in the right way if we're not all sharing a definition of what that behavior is. And I learned that revenge porn is often dangerously misapplied. It is the non-consensual sharing of an image used tactically to shame and humiliate a girl or woman that attempts to pornographize us. Our natural sexuality is, I don't know about yours, pretty gorgeous and wonderful. And my expressing it does not pornography me. So I have all these resources that I'm keenly aware so many people in the world do not. I was able to start the Speech Project with colleagues. I can often get a social media company's attention. I have a wonderful visit to Facebook HQ coming up. Hasn't helped the idiotic reporting standards yet. I actually pay someone to scrub my social media feeds, attempting to spare my brain the daily iterations of the trauma of hate speech. And guess what? I get hate speech for that. Oh, you live in an echo chamber. Well, guess what? Having someone post a photograph of me with my mouth open saying they can't wait to come on my face, I have a right to set that boundary. And this distinction between virtual and real is specious because guess what? That actually happened to me once when I was a child. And so that tweet brought up that trauma and I had to do work on that. But you know what we do? We take all of this hate speech and we disaggregate it and we code it and we give that data so that we understand the intersectionality of it. You know, when I get porn, when it's about political affiliation, when it's about age, when it's about all of it. We're going to win this fight. There are a lot of solutions. Thank goodness. I'm going to offer just a few. And of course, I challenge you to create and contribute your own. Number one, we have to start with digital media literacy. And clearly, it must have a gendered lens. Kids, schools, caregivers, parents, it's essential. Two, shall we talk about our friends in tech? Said with dignity and respect, the sexism in your workplaces must end. Edge, the global standard for gender equality is the minimum standard. And guess what? Silicon Valley, if L'Oreal in India, in the Philippines, in Brazil, and in Russia can do it, you can too. Enough excuses. Only when women have critical mass in every department at your companies, including building platforms from the ground up, will the conversations about priorities and solutions change. And more love for my friends in tech, profiteering off misogyny and video games must end. I'm so tired of hearing you talk to me at cocktail parties, like you did a couple weeks ago in Aspen, about how deplorable hashtag Gamergate was when you're still making billions of dollars off games that maim and dump women for sport. Basta, as the Italians would say. Enough. Our friends in law enforcement have much to do, because we've seen that online violence is an extension of in-person violence. In our country, more girls and women have been murdered by their intimate partners than died on 9/11 and have died since in Afghanistan and Iraq combined. And it's not cool to say that, but it is true. We care so much geopolitically about what men are doing over there to women over there. In 2015, 72,828 women used intimate partner violence services in this country. That is not counting the girls and women and boys who needed them. Law enforcement must be empowered with up-to-date internet technology, the devices, and an understanding of these platforms, how they work. The police wanted to be helpful when Amanda Hess called about the death threat she was getting on Twitter, but they couldn't really when they said, "What's Twitter?" Our legislators must write and pass astute legislation that reflects today's technology and our notions of free and hate speech. In New York recently, the law could not be applied to a perpetrator because the crimes must have been committed, even if it was anonymous. They must have been committed by telephone, in mail, by telegraph. The language must be technologically neutral. So apparently, I've got a pretty bold voice. So let's talk about our friends, white men. You have a role to play and a choice to make. You can do something or you can do nothing. We're cool in this room, but when this goes out, everyone will say, "Oh my God, she's a reverse racist." That quote was said by a white man, Robert Morris, chairperson, PricewaterhouseCooper. He asked me to include it in my talk. We need to grow support lines and help groups so victims can help each other when their lives and finances have been derailed. We must, as individuals, disrupt gender violence as it is happening. 92% of young people, 29 and under, witness it. 72% of us have witnessed it. We must have the courage and urgency to practice stopping it as it is unfolding. And lastly, believe her. Believe her.
Man whose presidency would eventually end in disgrace with his impeachment for obstruction of justice.
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. That was Ashley Judd. Sorry for all the profanity at the beginning of her talk there, but she was just trying to make a dot point, and she made it in such a dramatic fashion that it just overwhelms me sometimes. But anyway, look me up on Facebook. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Snapchat. Is that what it is? Instagram. But you know what? The number one social media site, there's no doubt about it, is Facebook. Everybody's on Facebook. I mean, you got ordinary grassroots everyday people on Facebook. The majority of the people on Facebook are everyday Americans, retired Americans, students. You've got it. Some unsavory folks are there too. So, but it's Facebook. It's always Facebook, and it will be Facebook. Okay, here we go. Chicago public schools borrow $275 million at a sky high interest rate. But you know what? This is just a drop in the bucket for what these public schools in the city of Chicago need. That's a drop in the bucket. I mean, if you think of it as think of it this way, you know, if you've got bad credit is bad. And most of us out here, we have bad credit. But Chicago Public Schools and the entire state of Illinois has bad credit, even worse than yours or mine. I mean, a whole state with bad credit, junk bonds or downgrading, downgradings. Illinois and the Chicago Public Schools have been downgraded so much, it's a shame. That's why they're paying this high-ass interest rate for a drop in the bucket. $275 million to cover teachers' pensions is a drop in the bucket. That's not enough money. But anyway, with Chicago's problems, you know, I mean, if you can always borrow money, but even if you have bad credit, you can borrow money. But like, just like the Chicago public schools have to pay a high interest rate, you're going to pay a high interest rate for borrowing money if you have bad credit. And this is not good for the city of Chicago to borrow money at a high interest rate. How the hell are you going to pay it back? I mean, there's no budget in the state of Illinois. How are you going to pay that back? That's why there's a high interest rate on it. It doesn't make any sense for Chicago Public Schools to get in more debt. They're already in debt. Chicago Public Schools are an inch away from bankruptcy, and then they go and borrow money like this with no way of paying it back. They're going to get sink more in debt. I believe in a couple of years, the schools are going to close in terms of bankruptcy if we don't get a new governor in the state of Illinois in 2018. These people are going to close their doors because a lot of social services have already closed their doors because there's no budget. And on top of that, Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois, has given a speech tonight. And I know I didn't watch it. I intentionally not want to watch this speech because he is the sole reason to why Illinois does not have a budget. I know what he's doing in his speech tonight. He's blaming others. He's acting as if he cares so much about the state and the social programs and the poor people that are being affected by his inability or his refusal to pass a budget. That's what this is. That is what this is. Now he's giving a speech, or he has gave a speech, because I believe it's over by now, and telling people that blaming other people in the state legislature. The state legislature has already passed a budget, but Rauner refuses to sign it. Now he's blaming other people, saying, hey, do the right thing. Do the right thing. He's telling other people to do the right thing. When it's his ass that's not doing the right thing. They are doing the right thing. They want to work with him. He doesn't show up. He has an attitude. People he don't like. And now he's saying do the right thing. When it's him who is not doing nothing. He's to blame for there being no budget in the state of Illinois. But like so many Republicans, he's trying to cater to his base. He's trying to cater to the crazies, the people who's going to believe anything that comes out of his mouth, the naive, the stupid, the dumb, the uneducated. These are the type of people that this man is after and may get and probably will get. But the smart people, he will not get. He will not convince the smart people that it's someone else's fault and not his. That's Bruce Rauner going around the state blaming every damn body he could think of but himself. J.B. Pritzker was correct. Bruce Rauner blames everybody but himself. He's the governor of Illinois. He takes the fall for this. And there is no doubt about it. The legislature in Illinois, the General Assembly, these people are trying to work with this man. But what he wants, what Bruce Rauner wants, is his turnaround agenda. He's pissed off because the state of Illinois will not let him have his turnaround agenda. So he's going to destroy the state and then blame a lot of other people for it. Tearing up the state, he's tearing down the state and saying, it's not my fault, it's their fault. It is his fault. He has budget sitting on his desk. All he has to do is give his signature, but he won't do it. Why? Because he's holding the state hostage until he gets what he wants. And basically, one of the things he wants is the bus unions. Tear the unions. He can't stand public schools. He's taking money from public schools and giving it to the richer schools downstate. That's wrong. It's Robin Hood in reverse. Take from the poor and give to the rich. That's wrong. And now he's giving a speech. I haven't heard much about it, but I've just read tidbits of it. And what I've read so far is that he's telling other people to do the right thing. He has to do the right thing. Illinois, he has to do the right thing. He's a Republican. What can you expect? Most people in Illinois did not vote for this guy. Most people in Illinois did not vote, period. That's why we got him in there. And I've said yesterday on the show, folks, when you don't vote, your vote is still being used. It's being used against you. So why not vote and use your vote the proper way, the way you want it to be used? Because if you don't use your vote, then it's going to elect someone that you do not want. There's too many people out here who feel like, you know, I'm not going to vote. They ain't doing nothing for me. The politicians stink. They lie. They ain't going to do nothing. You better get out there and vote. Because these guys, a lot of the social programs in the city of Chicago has shut down. Shelters have shut down, or either they have eliminated services, and they've been a lot of cutbacks. So a lot of people have been hurt already. The disabled, daycare centers. I mean, people who work, they got kids. They don't have anywhere to put their children while they go to their $8 an hour job. It's crazy. And now this governor, this awful governor, who can't stand Chicago, who can't stand public schools, who can't stand unions, he can't stand the mayor, he can't stand the school superintendent. And everything he says is correct, and everything everybody else says is wrong. But one thing that is very, very good about what's happening is that Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois, is up for re-election in 2018. He's got about 7 or 8 opponents running against him. That shows you, when you got 7 or 8 of eight people running against you, that tells you, the people of Illinois, that Bruce Rauner is vulnerable for losing this election. There's too many people running for his job. 8 people are running against him for his job because they know that he's vulnerable because he has not produced anything in the state of Illinois since he's been governor. I don't care what he's done. He until he enacts a budget for the state of Illinois, he's done nothing. He's not done his job. He's not complied with the Illinois state constitution. He just blows his nose on it and then says it's somebody else's fault. So, you know, I mean, the guy is on his way out of office. And now he's going on live television, on TV. And I don't think too many people watched him. You know, we'll find out. But I'm pretty sure most people who probably did watch him is probably the media. Most people who are suffering from all of these program cuts, they're probably watching him. But most people who have suffered, who are suffering from this, who have lost their jobs, lost this, lost that, you know, they're not listening to him. Because why? Why listen to somebody who hasn't done their job? Why listen to somebody who is just going to blame other people? Why listen to somebody who laughs, I think laughs and smirks at the condition that he has put the state in? If you look at his commercials on television, his campaign commercials, it seems as if this man is smirking and chuckling at the demise of the state of Illinois, which is his fault. And now he's going on television thinking somebody's going to watch him and listen to him. He's sometimes when he's not on television, he has a Facebook video. I don't even watch that. The man has not done his job. If he wants me to pay attention to him or anybody else in this state, do your job. Enact a budget. July 1st, which is next month, on July 1st, it will be three consecutive years that Illinois has not had a budget, and it has been devastating on people's lives. But do this clown care? No, he doesn't. He lies, he flies, he spends, and he blames other people. And the thing about it, some people are going to believe that crap that comes out of his mouth, and that's pathetic. But anyway, the folks who are suffering under him, who are suffering, who have suffered, who have lost their jobs, they are thinking the way I'm thinking. Do not listen to this guy. Do not believe him. The people in the legislature, which is controlled by Democrats, they're saying this guy's lying through his teeth. He's flying. He's bull crapping all over the place. You know, he's trying to get elected again. How could he hasn't done his job for 3 years and now he wants to get reelected? Give me a break. You don't put nobody back in a job that hasn't done the job. You want somebody that's going to do the job. He expects for you to elect him again to do nothing again. But blame other people, lie and spin. And chuckle about what's happening. I think one of his opponents is another rich guy, but he's a Democrat. He's J.B. Pritzker. I think this guy is going to tie a knot in Bruce Rauner's ass on election day. I really do. He's got as much money as Bruce Rauner. They're both millionaires, billionaires, whatever you want to call them. It's just phenomenal how this guy is just lying about what's going on. Blaming other people. Blame. It ain't me. I didn't do it. It's them. They won't cooperate. They won't give me what I want. And what he wants is to bust unions. What he wants is to hurt the middle class workers. He's a Republican. What else do you think a Republican may want? Look at the Donald Trump's health care bill, throwing 23 million people out of health care. This is what Republicans do. This is what they do. And then he's going to throw 23 million people off their health care and then give a speech saying that it's good for America. Now, how erroneous is that? How ridiculous is that? And the part about it is just so people, there are people going to like it. There are people going to, you know, especially some of Donald Trump's supporters. I mean, if you walk up to one of his supporters and say, well, you know, Donald Trump is going to, that health care bill that the Republicans trying to run or sneak through, is going to cut off your Medicaid. What do you think? I mean, well, yeah, I know that, but I like Donald Trump and I'm a Donald Trump supporter. Yeah, but Donald Trump is going to throw you off your Medicaid. He's going to take away your health care. Yeah, but I'm going to have to die someday. So I support that. You support not having Medicaid. You support not being able to go to the hospital. Well, you know, people got to die. I'm all for Donald Trump. I mean, you got people thinking like that. They're going to get thrown off their food stamps. They're going to get thrown off Meals on Wheels. Yeah, but I think he's going to do a good job, but he's throwing you off your, he's taking food out of your mouth. He's going to cut your SNAP benefits. Yeah, but, you know, people got to die. So I still support him. So, you know, there it goes. I mean, just like Bruce Rauner, you got people out here that's, you know, he's affecting, he's hurting, who are going to still vote for him. But I don't think there's many of them. Just like I said, it's a lot of crazy people out here, but I think there's more smart, intelligent, and bright people out here than there are people who are stupid. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I want to thank my guest, Ivan Edmonds, for being on the show. He was back. He was talking about the Big Hype, which is, I'm assuming, is a publicity company. And commentary on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We always have commentary on the show. And 7:23, so we got about 7 more minutes left into the show. We're going to do this.
During an interview with Politico that was posted online this week, White House advisor, White House aide, whatever you want to call her, White House spokesperson maybe, Kellyanne Conway, took a shot at her critics once again. She told Politico that her critics were, quote, unhappy people with poison keyboards. I guess what she's trying to say is that they're a bunch of internet trolls going out there just saying mean old things to Kellyanne, who really isn't doing anything wrong. She doesn't understand why people are being so mean and horrible to her these days. Now, according to this interview that she gave with Politico, she had explained to her children that, yeah, look, mommy's going to be doing this thing. People are going to come at her. It's going to be, you know, pretty ugly sometimes, but just deal with it. To be honest, that is a very good thing to tell your children. Yeah, when you're in the public spotlight, there's going to be the naysayers. But if she took the time to explain that to her children, maybe she should have taken the time to explain to her children that, hey, listen, mommy's going to have to go on TV and lie through her teeth to the American public about things that never happened. She is the one who came up with the term alternative facts. She is the one who invented the Bowling Green massacre that never happened. So I understand nobody likes to get criticized. But Kellyanne, you're inviting this on yourself. The people who criticize you, who call you out, are not unhappy people. I can tell you firsthand, I'm a very happy person. I love my life right now. But I will continue to criticize you anytime you feel the need to go on television and lie to the American public on behalf of Donald Trump. Anytime you make up a fake terrorist attack, we're going to be there, as will everybody else online. And it's not because we just dislike you. It's because we don't want you to continue to dumb down the United States. This is our civic duty, to hold you and everyone else in your White House accountable. So you may think it's fine to go out there and give these interviews and attack the people who you claim are attacking you. But the truth is, all we're doing is trying to hold you accountable and, to be honest, try to undo some of the damage that you're inflicting on the public today. There are Republicans out there in the United States today who, honest to God, believe that the Bowling Green massacre was a thing, that it happened, that it was carried out by Iraqi immigrants, and that U.S. citizens died as a result of it. And that's all on you, Kellyanne. You're poisoning the public discourse. It's not the people who dislike you. They don't have the problems. You do. And you need to learn, and you need to take the time to teach your children that when you screw up, you do get held accountable. When you lie to hundreds of millions of people, they're going to come after you. And the only way you can make it right is to go out and apologize and try to do the right thing from that point forward.
That's I totally agree with that. I mean, when you lie, it's awful, it's bad, it's terrible, but that seems lying seems to be the norm. Donald Trump has taught so many people to lie through their teeth, it's a damn shame. He's taught so many people to go out there and just, you know, fib and be a dishonest, falsehoods, and people think it's okay to lie because the president of the United States does it. It is not okay to lie. It is not okay to say things that are false. That's a bad thing for our children to be learning, to think because of the president of the United States tell lies that everybody else should tell them, because that's not true. So you do not have to lie. Do not lie. Lying is wrong. Lying is bad, and it should not be tolerated, even if the president of the United States does it.
Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived.
Bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has to crawl.
George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, WTTY, out of the city of Chicago. It's been a blessing. Thanks, everybody. You've been great and wonderful, and have a great evening, and I hope you join me tomorrow. Bye-bye, everybody.